WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. This is the place to come for conversation. Try to do our best to give you a variety of conversations. Could always just kind of stick to one topic, just always bounce around, but try to make sure that there's a focus to the conversations that we have. We will kick things off right after traffic. We'll check in with Renee Hamilton to find out how things are going one final time in just a couple of moments. But upon our return, we will speak with Attorney General Maura Healey, who is a Democratic candidate for governor. Get her take on some of the key issues, some of the top issues that the Commonwealth is facing as a candidate. Interesting enough, actually had a interview lined up with her Democratic opponent, but it was recently announced that the senator is deciding to not stay in the race. So it'll be interesting, but still a good conversation looking forward to with the Attorney General. Get her take on, again, some of the key issues. Probably one of the big ones that I'll look to ask her about is, well, obviously we're all paying just a smidge under $5. Is there, you know, if it was a Healey administration, would we see a little bit of a gas tax break? I'm hearing more and more from officials that might not be the thing to do. We're hearing it both locally, the local state senators and representatives and constitutional officers, and then even up on the federal level, you know, president has mentioned it, but folks in Congress like, it wouldn't do any good to, you know, let folks save 18 cents a gallon. So, but there are other issues to discuss, and we're looking forward to it. Follow that up with former state senator Dean Tran. The senator is now, he's no longer in the legislature here, the local legislature, but he is running for Congress. The 3rd Congressional District. So we're going to chat with him. Actually, he was one of the original petitioners referendum to repeal the driver's licenses for illegal immigrants law. That was the one that actually was overridden by the legislature. The governor, they actually vetoed the governor's vote on it. So we'll talk with him about that as he kind of led the charge on that to repeal it, or he's leading the charge to repeal. We'll get his take on that. We'll chat with him about the economy and inflation and get a little bit of a take on his current campaign for Congress. Hour number two, we will speak with Jess Sullivan, Jesse Sullivan, Artistic Director for Americana Theater. Is they're actually going to be presenting a rousing bluegrass musical, The Robber Bridegroom. I think that's Bridegroom. Don't get Bridegroom into the... It's a tale, a bluegrass musical tale. Yeah, no, it's Bridegroom. And this is going to be happening from July 7th to the 24th at the Spire Center. We'll talk about this. I've never heard of a bluegrass musical, so I was intrigued by the offer to discuss it. So we will be speaking with Jesse about that. And then we're going to close things out with Nicole Aslan. And Nicole is an author. This is her second book. We actually, a year and a half ago, two years ago, interviewed her about her first book. It's a murder mystery. Murder at First Pitch was her first book as she wrote this. Now, a second book in the series, and it promises, my understanding is there's also this is a third book that's already in queue, but she's going to be coming on to talk about concession stand crimes. Let me say that again, concession stand crimes. So this is kind of a baseball theme here, too, with some of the shenanigans. It's almost like Nancy Drew meets, name your favorite ball player. So we're looking forward to talking with her about her new book and the concept behind it. So that's coming up. I think right now, time for us to find out what's happening one final time out on the roadways as we check in with Renee Hamilton. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now Hudson, New Hampshire.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's. Did y'all know people all over the world celebrate the 4th of July? Not because we fought and won our independence. It's our idea of freedom. Having somewhere you can practice whatever religion. Somewhere to work, play, and raise a family in peace. No matter what race, religion, or creed. We truly live in the best country on this speck of dust called Earth. I say idea because we clearly have work to do. We, the people of the United States of America. The 4th of July has always been my favorite holiday. I hope it's my kids' favorite as well.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, Hudson, New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
We return for more Monday Night Talk. Joining us is Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, who is a Democratic candidate for governor. Attorney General, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you, Kevin.
So right out of the gate, I have to ask, why have you decided to run for governor?
Because I believe, Kevin, that Massachusetts is the greatest state in the country. We've got a lot going for us. But the truth is, a lot of people right now are hurting, and they're not feeling that things are working for them. They're not enjoying the kind of economic opportunity that they should be enjoying. And I want to change that. I want to be a governor who's about creating opportunity, creating jobs, creating economic mobility. We've got real challenges on our hands when it comes to the high cost of housing in particular. We've got a transportation system that needs investment. And we've got a lot of work to do as we build out climate resiliency across the region. So a lot of work to do, workforce issues, a continuing opioid crisis. But look, I've been Attorney General the last 7 years. I know how to get things done. I know how to lead, having managed an office of 600 people and a budget of $60 million a year. And I have been working up close with business leaders, community leaders, state and federal officials for a long time now. And I know what we need to do to get things done.
Yeah, you kind of jumped on. You mentioned a couple of different issues that I want to make sure that we touch upon. Where would you rank housing and health care as agenda items if and when you are elected to office?
I think housing is right at the top. You know, whether I'm talking to people who are running companies, CEOs, their top concern right now, Kevin, is that employees are looking to move elsewhere because they can't afford rents, they can't afford to buy a home. They can't afford to raise a family here. When I'm talking to people around the state, they're telling me the same thing. They can't afford rents. We've seen landlords, you know, double, triple rents. We've seen also the just prices go way, way up. Do you know that the average median price of a house in Massachusetts is $530,000 right now? That's the Massachusetts average. And so, you know, we've got to get that under control. And one of the things I've called for, Kevin, is more housing stock. We need to create more housing units around the state that will be available for purchase to middle-income folks and to those who need more affordability.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one of the things that, you know, when you talk about 40B and affordable housing, is that a key way to be able to increase housing stock? And how are there creative ways to be able to increase the housing stock here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we've got to do. We've got to build more housing. We've got to build more apartments. We've got to build more multifamily housing. We've got to build more single-family homes. We need to build out more around our transit hubs. That makes a lot of sense to me, to situate housing near transportation, that we should be investing in public transportation so that people can live near where they need to get to in terms of their transit, whether that's by rail or by bus. And, you know, we also need to deal with some communities who don't want to see that kind of housing. The fact of the matter is we need to see some relaxation in our zoning. We need to see some more production out there, all the way from the Cape to the Berkshires, because I'm telling you that this is an issue about Massachusetts competitiveness. It's an issue that is top for so many families right now, the high cost of housing, in addition, of course, to gas and to groceries and to childcare, all issues. But as a state, we've got to come together and deal with our housing issue.
Let's talk about COVID. This has been an item, a pandemic that we didn't foresee coming. How do you feel it elects? How do you feel it will affect the next individual who is elected governor?
Well, I think we're going to continue to deal with COVID and the results of COVID. I mean, look at what's happened already. We've got a workforce in healthcare that's been decimated. So many people are burnt out. They were overburdened, overextended, and they've left. We actually need to fill that workforce as an immediate matter. We've got a lot of people who are dealing with anxiety, depression. We have young people who missed a lot of school for a couple of years, and we need to make that up to them. We also need to deal with how work has changed. More people are working from home, working remotely. So what does that mean in terms of downtown spaces and the vibrancy of cities? How are we going to evolve and work through this? COVID, I also think, Kevin, has, for all the heartache and all the disruption, and my heart goes out to families who had loved ones who got sick, who had loved ones who died, and I just want to give it up to all the folks on the front lines and healthcare and first responders and people working in the grocery stores and driving the trains and buses that they got us through this. We also have learned about some resilience and new ways of doing things, and I want us in Massachusetts to embrace new ways of doing things.
We look right now, inflation is a key item that everybody's dealing with, rising fuel costs, rising costs to do business, which could potentially cripple an economy if this trend continues. What do you feel that your administration is will have to do to prevent the state from going into or enduring a long-term recession?
Well, actually, as a state, we are in relatively good fiscal shape. We're in good financial shape. We have that going for us, Kevin. But you're absolutely right that we have inflation headwinds right on us now. Gas, groceries, you name it. And people, families are feeling that. So as governor, I want to fight for affordability. I want to make things more affordable, healthcare more affordable, housing more affordable, transportation more affordable. All the basics, right? That's what I want to be about. We've got to find a way to bring relief to our families now and over the longer term. And, you know, I know that we're going to be dealing with this over the next few months, particularly when it comes to gas prices. And we've got to find a way to give people relief in the short term and in the long term. But housing, healthcare, and transportation are the big drivers right now.
Any surprise that we haven't seen the legislature move to have like a gas holiday, you know, relieve the gas tax? Is that something that if this continues and we still see high gas prices, that maybe you would seek to relax the gas tax for a short term?
Well, here's what I want to make sure we do. I want to make sure that we actually provide relief that gets to people. So, you know, whatever the proposal is, let's make sure that it's actually ending up in dollars being back in the pockets of people across the state. That's the first thing. I do think we need to think about what kinds of relief we can be giving people. The legislature right now is considering an array of proposals. The governor has put forward any number of ideas. I know those talks are ongoing and we're towards the close of a legislative session. So I hope we see some action there because our families do need it.
Let's talk a little bit about policing and the state's criminal legal system. Where do you feel it stands currently, and what needs to be done to further reform these two areas?
Well, I think we need to do a few things. One, the state, through legislation last year, created a commission that's going to implement standards for policing and certify and decertify police if they do things that are outside of what they should be doing. That's the first thing. So we need to support that commission. We also need to recruit more people into policing, because the fact of the matter is we don't have enough people going into policing right now. A lot of people are leaving policing. It's a hard job. It's a hard time. It's been a really, really challenging time in our country and in our state, of course. And so we need to make sure that we are supporting police with a workforce. We need to make sure that we are providing them with the training and the supports they need. And one thing, Kevin, that's really important is we need to do more when it comes to mental health. Police are often called upon to respond to situations that involve a real issue around mental health. And we need to make sure that communities, we are supporting as a state, communities' efforts to bring mental health providers, social service workers, and the like to these situations, because police are finding themselves having to deal with really problematic and trying issues. And that we need to continue to do.
If you're just joining us, so we are speaking with a Massachusetts Attorney General, Maura Healey. She is a Democratic candidate for governor. She's joining us to talk about her campaign to be your next governor. I would ask you this. We talked a little bit about transportation. We talked about the gas tax. Where do you see the transportation infrastructure today? And what would you like to do if elected governor to for the betterment of our roadways and our public transit?
What do we need to do? I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to make sure that our transportation, our buses, our rails, commuter rail, T, are a few things. One, running and available at times that work for people's work hours. Two, we need to make sure that they run on time and are reliable. And three, we need to make sure that they're safe and affordable. Right now, there are huge issues, particularly when it comes to the safety of the MBTA. That's going to be addressed right now. We also need to make transportation affordable, because if we want to get people out of their cars and using public transportation, it's got to be affordable, it's got to be accessible, and it's got to be safe. These are the things that we need to invest in. And there are a number of projects, including South Coast Rail, including infrastructure investments in regional transit authorities, which are really important, because this isn't just commuter rail and the T, it's regional transit authorities and buses in so many places that need to be supported. And finally, you know, as you and I drive around the state, Kevin, we know that we've got bridges and roads that desperately need repair. We've got to make those investments as well.
Are those investments something that we do here within the Commonwealth, or is it something that you reach out to our federal partners to see if we can get grants and monies to be able to take care of the infrastructure?
It's both. It's both, right? And we've seen that through ARPA and some of the money that's come through. We've got a terrific congressional delegation out there working hard every day to try to bring back money to the Commonwealth. So we've got to make use of those federal monies. We've got to make use of state money. This is an all hands on deck moment in terms of investment in important infrastructure, transportation, housing, healthcare. The other issue I mentioned, Kevin, is childcare. Now, Massachusetts has super high rates of childcare, and right now that's keeping a lot of women from returning to the workforce. Mm. Right now it's costing as much to send an infant to daycare in Massachusetts as it is to send an 18-year-old off to a public university. That's wrong. We've got to change that. We need more providers. We need more people out there providing childcare. And, you know, again, this is something that I am calling out as a real issue that we need to deal with in the state. It's also why I support the Common Start legislation, which would have the effect of capping how much each family has to pay for necessary childcare.
just a couple of years ago that the legislature passed the Student Opportunity Act. It was a little slow getting out of the gate because of the pandemic. How important is education to the Healey administration moving forward? Do you feel that the Student Opportunity Act will do enough in the coming years, or is this something more that you'd like to see done to fortify education here in the Commonwealth?
Hey, I want to be the education governor. Education is absolutely so fundamental. It's so fundamental to the lives of our young people, where they end up, what kind of jobs, what kind of opportunities they have. And it's an obligation of government working together, state, local, to provide that to our young people and to our families. Here's what we need to do. We need to support and fully fund the Student Opportunity Act. That's an important piece of legislation. It will go a long way, but it isn't enough, because we also need to, Kevin, make sure that we are giving our schools right now wraparound services. What am I talking about? I'm talking about social workers. I'm talking about guidance counselors, therapists, mental health specialists. Right now, what I hear from so many parents, administrators, principals, and teachers is that they just don't have access to these resources for their kids. And kids, especially after COVID, coming through what they've lived through, really, really need that. So fully fund Student Opportunity Act, but also get those additional supports to our schools.
We just have a few minutes left in our conversation with you, Attorney General. But I want to give you an opportunity. Maybe there's an issue or two that we haven't touched upon, but maybe you might want to address or at least speak to for a moment or two, if you will. It's almost like an open question.
Well, I appreciate it. Let me say this. There are a couple things that are really, I think, important that we need to deal with. And one is what's happening in this country. There's a lot of anger out there. There's a lot of vitriol and disagreement. There are a lot of people, particularly politicians, who seem to want to pit one person against the other. And usually they're saying and doing things that are just for their own political gain. They don't really care about the people that they're elected to serve. But we can be different in Massachusetts, and we have been different. And I want to be a leader who brings people together, who gets people working together. I want us to rise above the noise and get things done and deliver real results for people. I want to be somebody who works with our local officials, our state officials, our federal officials, and also with our business community and community organizations and groups. And, you know, there's so much potential there. So that's the first point. And that's a message I really want the voters to hear from me, is that you will see a governor who tries to see you and tries to listen to you and tries to meet you where you are, recognizing that we've got people in all sorts of circumstances with all sorts of backgrounds and views in this state. And that's really important if we really are a commonwealth. The other thing is this. I think it's time that we do what we need to do to address equity, you know, and put an equity lens on everything. I think COVID has shown how racial disparities are real. You just look at COVID and who was more likely to get sick, who was more likely to die. You know, we need to, and we have an opportunity now to address racial disparities in our environment, in healthcare, in education, and in employment. And that is something that I want to be really intentional about. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, it just is the case still that if you're a white family in Greater Boston, your household net worth is probably $250,000. If you're Black or African American, it's about $8. We need to change that. And I want your viewers also to know that as the Attorney General who sued the Sacklers and Purdue Pharma, combating the opioid crisis remains and would remain a top priority. It's why I'm proud that my team brought back over $500 million to the state that's going directly to treatment, recovery, prevention. We need to continue to invest in those efforts because people continue to overdose, they continue to die, and we need to, as a state, just because COVID and other things took the front page, the opioid crisis is real. Having spent a lot of time in the Taunton and Brockton area, I know a lot of families have suffered, and I just want people to know we're not going to stop working on that.
If folks want to get involved with your campaign, if they have any questions, they want to, you know, follow where you will be traveling around the Commonwealth and meeting and greeting folks, how can they do that?
Oh, well, come visit us, I guess, at moriahealey.com. There are great ways to read about what we're up to, see what I'm doing, follow us on social media. There are also, and I welcome this, opportunities to volunteer and get involved. Really, you know, as somebody who played point guard, that was the position I played in basketball and in high school, college, and when I played professionally, you know, this is about teamwork. This is about bringing people together. And the greatest statistic for a point guard, as you know, Kevin, is the assist.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to lead as governor. And we want to build a big team for this campaign. And we want to build a big team that can deliver for families around this state.
Well, I will say, as the Celtics could have used a ball handler like you during this recent run in the finals. Hopefully they are successful next year.
Well, I hope they are. They needed to take care of the ball. So hopefully they'll work that out in the offseason.
Attorney General, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Kevin. Take good care.
You got it.
That's it for this segment. And we'll be back with more in just a moment. You, of course, I tuned in to Monday Night Talk, heard here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned for more.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
It was a beautiful blue sky day in spring, opening day at Fenway Park, and opening day in Tony Mancini's driveway. Tony's dad, justifiably proud of his Little League fastballer, set up a competition in the driveway, all the neighborhood kids taking turns pitching. Tony's dad catching, judging by feel, who's got the hottest fastball. And then, Tony's turn, the windup, the pitch! Oh, right through the windshield of his father's SUV, Tony! Work on that control!
That's my boy! Right through the windshield! Look out, Yankees! Tony's coming!
I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. We come to your work or ballpark. We fix your windshield. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. Play ball!
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back with more Monday Night Talk. Our guest joining us right now, this gentleman, served in the Massachusetts legislature between 2017 and 2020, a Republican state senator for the Worcester Middlesex District, now running for the 3rd Congressional District. We have Mr. Dean Tran joining us. Senator, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Good evening, Kevin, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your show.
Well, I invited you on for a couple of different reasons. The primary reason is in regards to the referendum to attempt to appeal the law for driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. And my sources tell me that you were one of the lead individuals who signed and have pushed this petition.
I was. I was the second person to sign on to the petition behind Maureen Maloney. And recently, this past weekend, I also signed on to a lawsuit to speed up the process. And late this afternoon, I received great news that the nomination papers, of course, you know, the papers for people to sign on to the petition, is available and will be made available by the Mass GOP.
So what happens now? What are you waiting? What are you waiting for? Is this something that you know we're going to see immediate action, or is this something we see at the ballot come November?
Well, we have to follow the process, right? And the process is that the group that is leading this effort will need to garner somewhere in the vicinity of 40,000 certified signatures, and that is 40,000 certified voters in the state in order to get this question onto the ballot. And if we are successful, then this question will be on the ballot in this November's election for the people of the state to vote on this issue.
What do you feel is the problem with this particular issue, with driver's licenses for folks who are not here legally from another country?
Mm-hmm. So I am very familiar with this this issue, Kevin, and that is because this issue came before the state legislature when I sat on the Transportation Committee. I sat on that committee as a ranking member, and the bill came before the Transportation Committee for hearing and debate. And I sat on that debate. I listened to all the testimonies, and I had questions. And, you know, at that moment, during that time, I refused to let that bill to leave the committee because there were so many unanswered questions. And I heard testimonies such as from people who have been living in this country, in this state, over 20 years and did nothing in terms of learning the language and applying to be citizens, and they just want a free ride to acquire the driver's license. And then further, I saw the true intent behind the legislation, and that wasn't about providing public safety to the general public. It was really about allowing these people to get involved and participate in the electoral process. And that is completely unacceptable. That true intention came and was disclosed in this year when the legislature voted on it, and there was an amendment that requested to make a distinction between the two licenses, and they denied that amendment, Kevin. So, the intention behind providing public safety, allowing these people to drive, is not true.
And it's worth noting, if I may ask you this, is you are not anti-immigrant by any means. Am I correct? Would you mind sharing your story, your family story?
Absolutely, I'm not anti-immigrant. I believe there should be a process for people who are law-abiding citizens, who are law-abiding residents who have been contributing to our society, paying their taxes, waking up in the morning, going to work, provide for their families, and being good part of the community. I believe there should be a path for them to apply to become citizens, and we do have that path. I wasn't born here, Kevin. I was born in Vietnam, and my father served 25 years in the Southern Vietnamese Army as an Army officer. And when we lost the war, I was an infant. My mother was a very successful small business person, and my father was, of course, he served in the Army, and they had to escape the country, escape communism, because they would have captured my father and put him in something they call, quote unquote, re-education camp. So as an infant and with my siblings and parents, we escaped the country on a wooden boat, drifted in the ocean for days without food. We were blessed to be alive. People around us were dying. And then we landed on one of the roughest refugee camps in the world, and that was Thailand. And I spent my toddler years there. And then, we follow the process. We apply for green cards to come to this country, the greatest country in the world. I spent 2.5 years in the refugee camp. And finally, we were sponsored by a Catholic priest in Clinton, Massachusetts, where we emigrated. too, and where I called my first real home, because I never had a real first home. So we came over to this country through the green card process, and then after that, we assimilated into the culture, learned the language, achieved great education through the education system, and and then became U.S. citizens. It was easy for myself, for my siblings, but my parents had to study the exam, and I think my father failed the exam 5 times, my mother failed the exam 6 times, but they never gave up, Kevin. They keep, because being an American citizen was the most important thing to them. When we came over to this country, they refused to talk about the country that we left because of the hardship that they went through. They just wanted us to become American citizens, and they wanted to become American citizens, and they did everything they could to become American citizens. And that should be the way that people become American citizens. And then when you become American citizens, you can get your driver's license easily. But the process that the legislators in this state have proposed and passed is just, unfair, and it's not right to the people who went through the system correctly and became American citizens.
Is there any concern at being able to get the needed signatures? Or is there a drive happening? Do you want to give out any information if folks want to get involved?
So if people want to get involved, they can go on to the Massachusetts GOP Republican website, as well as contact their local Republican city and town committees. Those people will be readily available to help them get involved in this process. It's going to be a challenge, but I think it's going to be an easy challenge, though, because this is an issue that a lot of people are looking at, and they want to get involved. Because if you're a law-abiding citizen, if you're a law-abiding resident, and you know what is right and what is wrong, this is an issue that you want to vote on. Because, at the end of the day, it is a public safety issue that is going to affect the people who did not have a say in passing this law.
If you're just tuning in, we have one-time State Senator Dean Tran, who is our guest, now candidate for Congress, the Massachusetts 3rd Congressional District. Let's take a moment to talk a little bit about your campaign and how it's been going, and some of your real concerns in regards to what we're going through. Especially, we're talking about inflation. We're talking about issues with our economy.
Right. Some of those issues that you just mentioned are near and dear to everyone's hearts. Right. We have a very weak economy. We have a record high inflation. We have record high prices in gas and food. One of the things that people are not talking about and the media is hiding from the general public is the rise in crime, not just in this state, but across the country. We have, poor border security, and our foreign policies are non-existent. We used to be the leader of the free world. Our president used to be the leader of the free world. And nowadays, other countries are not even picking up his phone calls. So the reason why I'm running is I want to make sure that we get back to having the strongest economies in not just in our history, but in the world. I want to make sure that people are able to go to work, pay their bills, provide for their families, and I want to make sure that your communities are safe. And if you look at the congressional delegation in this state, none of the 9 congressional members have addressed any of these issues. I just don't understand. So I want to make a difference. I have made a difference in this state. As you know, I don't know if you know a lot about my background, Kevin. When I was elected to the city council in the city of Fitchburg.
Fitchburg, yep.
Where I served six terms, I became the first Vietnamese American to be elected to office in the state. And then when I was elected to the state senate, I became the first Vietnamese American to be elected to the state legislature, and the first Vietnamese American, the first refugee, and Asian-born American to be elected to the state senate. And I did great things for my district, and I represented a lot of people across the state who were pretty much voiceless. And I'm looking to do the same thing as a U.S. congressman. It's unbelievable that we are in the year 2022, and when my name is on the November ballot, I will be the first Asian American to run for the U.S. Congress in this state. I am proud of that, but at the same time, a little bit disappointed. We live in a state where, you know, people promote diversity, but yet I will be the first Asian American to run for the U.S. Congress. So I'm looking not just to make history, but also to give a voice, give a representation to those who have been voiceless, who have been underrepresented, and moving this country in the right direction. And also, I would also add, just imagine this, Kevin. You know, all the polls are showing that the Republican Party is going to take over Congress. And when I am elected in November, not only I will make history in this state, but imagine the publicity that this state will get when you have the first Asian American elected to U.S. Congress, as well as a Republican elected from this state, and I will be able to do incredible things for this state of Massachusetts.
I believe that infrastructure is something that you pride yourself on, especially in your district. What are some of the things that you would hope to achieve for your district and for the folks here in the Commonwealth if you are successful in November?
Well, infrastructure is very important. That was one of my main issues that I worked on when I was in the state senate, and I will continue to work on that as the next U.S. congressman. And, for example, the Rourke Bridge up in Lowell, I can guarantee you something like that would not take that long to get funded. And matter of fact, it was not funded by any member of our congressional delegation. It took the governor to allocate the money to fix the bridge. In addition to that, we have highways that are in dismal condition. They are unsafe. For example, Route 2 from 495 to Central Mass to the west. We need to focus on that. I did, when I was in the state senate, I had the governor promise to do a feasibility study on Route 2, which has never been done before. And a lot of those public, safety improvements that are taking place on Route 2, have my fingerprints on them during my time in the state senate. And so, Route 2 is a huge issue for the central Massachusetts communities, because that is the corridor to economic growth and economic development in that area. And then when you're talking about Merrimack Valley, it's the same situation there. If you drive on the highways, 495 up to the Merrimack Valley, the infrastructure there, the bridges, the roads, the streets, they all need attention. And with all the money that we have, there is no excuse that we can't allocate money, that we can't bring the funding back to the communities and help the infrastructure.
If folks want to find out more about your campaign or they want to get involved, how can they do that?
So my campaign is very energized right now, Kevin. I cannot believe the momentum that we have. People are gravitating to the campaign, gravitating to whatever event that I attend to. It is unbelievable the reception that we're getting. And I can tell you, Kevin, if it goes like this through the next 4 months to November, the only way that I'm going to lose this race is probably through mail-in balloting and drop-off boxes. But I would love for more people to join my campaign. It's growing. It's unbelievable, growing by the day. And they can join my campaign through my website. They can also get in touch with me personally through my website at deantran.com. And we're very active on Facebook as well, Dean Tran for Congress, as well as on Twitter. We have a Twitter handle too, Dean Tran for Congress as well.
Well, if you could, if there are any more updates in regards to the referendum to repeal the driver's licenses for illegal immigrants law, if there's any more updates, feel free to reach out to me, and would love to at least follow along with the process with that.
Absolutely, I will. Thank you very much, Kevin.
You got it. There he is. Dean Tran is a former state senator and now running for Congress, our guest. We're going to step aside. That does it for hour number one. It is gone, but fear not. Hour number two is on deck. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
ATD-FM Marshfield, WMEX Quincy, WBMS Brockton, and Translator W266DA Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
The pandemic is over and life is finally returning to normal. It's time to return to McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman. Come enjoy Shepherd's Pie, a pint of Guinness, and one of the best pizzas you'll ever have on the South Shore. Play single Wednesday nights at McGuigan's or listen to the live entertainment every Friday and Saturday night. For comfort food with an Irish pub atmosphere, go to McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street in Whitman Center. And check out the patio at McGuigan's next door at 552 Washington Street.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both, because being connected feels good, and who doesn't need more of that these days? Don't miss Talk with Francesca Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
All right, so we are back. This is hour number two as we're chatting here. Later this hour, Nicole Aslan, author of Concession Stand Crimes. She'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour. But right now, we're going to talk a little theater. It's a great time to be talking theater, Americana Theater Company. I think this is our first foray into talking with this theater group. We had Michelle McGrath on a couple of weeks ago. We kind of teased some of the things going on this summer, and I believe this was one of the conversations or one of the topics that we teased, we touched upon. It was an appetizer. Joining us today is the artistic director for Americana Theater, the Americana Theater Company, Jesse Sullivan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having us on.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved with this theater company? Are you a theater guy through and through?
Theater guy through and through. South Shore native. Grew up in Carver, Massachusetts. Close friend of mine in high school and college. We both ended up going to the Hart School of Music in the University of Hartford, Connecticut. Back in the day, it was always our dream to bring theater sort of back to our area. Derek and his wife Jennifer started the company back in 2011. They started doing some small boutique theater shows down at Plymouth Center for the Arts, one room deals, 99 seats, immersive type theater. But they were based out of California at the time. So it was kind of like the circus. We'd show up, do some shows, and then pack up and go home again, both always with the intent of being back for the next summer. In 2013, I was still living in New York at the time. They convinced me to come up here and jump in for one of our shows. And it sort of at that moment we decided, you know what, we need to do this. It's always been a dream of ours, so let's put our money where our mouth is and start this for real.
So would you call yourself a triple threat? He laughed, folks. What are some of the parts that you've had some of the plays that you've been in?
Sure. I've done a lot of regional theater, a couple national tours. I was in the Scarlet Pimpernel national tour and Miss Saigon, the national tour. Worked out at Barrington Stage out in the Berkshires, worked down on Long Island, Indiana, all over the place. You know, there's a house somewhere on the East Coast. I've probably worked in it.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Lots of fun shows.
But favorite role? Have you had a favorite role, or have you yet to have that favorite role?
Well, it's kind of a cheater thing. We every other Christmas, we do It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio hour.
Oh.
And it's hard not to fall in love with George Bailey. So that's probably the role that is nearest and dearest to my heart.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Americana Theater Company.
Yes.
How long have they been around? Is the Spire Center going to be their new home?
Yes.
At least hopefully.
Yes. So we were lucky enough in 2015 to get into the Spire. They had an opening in July. That was our first production in that space. We did Grease. And from that point on, they've been very kind to sort of just earmark us for July. So if you're in Plymouth in July, come to the Spire and you will see Americana Theater Company.
So it seems as though you've chosen an interesting, and I was saying this as I was teasing your spot here, mm-hmm. I've heard of musicals. I've been in musicals, but I've never heard of one that had the description of rousing bluegrass musical.
Yes. It's sort of become our catchphrase. It's the best musical you've never heard of is the way this one's been selling out. It's The Robber Bridegroom is a sort of a southern fairy tale. It's Robin Hood-esque type feel to it. A lot of larger-than-life characters. Very funny. Very broad. We chose this show not only because we love showcasing our talented actors, many of which play instruments in the show, but we believe in our company. We have a great returning company. A lot of guys, we send it out to our stable of actors that have come here before, and they always say, if we can come back, we'd love to. We cast from all across the country. In this particular show, we've got kids from California, New York, North Carolina, Virginia. Right up the street, we've got some kids from Stonehill that just graduated from their theater program. So,
Skyhawks, okay.
Yeah, I've got a cornucopia of talent in this one. It's a rousing musical. If you like banjo, fiddle, bass, cello, mandolin, guitar, percussion, piano, I mean, everything's going on in this. We have two fiddle players actually in the show.
Really?
Yes. So we're very excited, and the music is just so fun.
Is this music that's actually taking place on the stage, or do you have a pit?
Nope. The conceit of this show is no one leaves the stage the whole time. Everyone's on there. Kind of a mix of storyteller theater and that sort of, you know, anything can become a moment during the show. And we have actors that will put down their instrument, get out there and do a little song and dance and do something, and then pick up their fiddle and get right back to it.
So this is, I teased about a triple threat. You've
got
to be a quadruple threat.
Yes.
You have to be able to play a musical instrument, sing, dance, and act your fanny off.
They are so, so talented.
Wow.
Truly.
Talk to me about the process of choosing this particular play. And what has it been like? You know, give us some of the players. Who is leading the music? Who is directing this?
Sure.
Who are some of the key folks behind the scenes directing this?
Directing. So we've got Dr. Michael Kirkland. He comes from Virginia. Very well-known director down there. Done a lot of regional directing. And this is his third show for us. Like I said, we love inviting people back And it's a testament to the people that we get that they typically want to come back. They want to come back and share in the experience again. 3 weeks in Plymouth, you know, close to the Cape in the summer is not a bad gig. And we're very excited to have him. Our music director is Sarah Troxler, who has been known all over the South Shore. She teaches piano through South Shore Conservatory. She does just finished doing Spelling Bee over in Scituate. They just finished that show. She was music director for that show.
Wow.
And like I said, she's costumed and on stage, banging on the keys for us as well.
So you had teased the fact of being in the show. So you get to be Clement Musgrove?
Clement Musgrove, yep. I play the father of the romantic lead of the girl. kind of a little of a simple man. Simple man with wants to marry off his daughter to the right guy. And unfortunately, in a show like this, there is no right guy. It's a lot of characters, you know. Derek Martin plays the robber bridegroom himself. He also plays guitar. And he is choreographing the show. Very, very talented man. Our Rosamond is a romantic lead. She is named Kelly Dunn. She's based out of California. I want to say this is also her third show with us, her last being Boeing Boeing, which we did two seasons ago. Very talented singer. She does not play an instrument. Like me, she can play an instrument, unlike me, but she doesn't in this show.
Well, you probably could sing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Sing and act and do a little two-step. Aaron and David Friday, who have been company members with us since 2015, play two of the more sinister characters in the show. One is Salome, her evil stepmother, and the other is Little Harp, is David Friday, and he is sort of a rough and tumble competing bandit with the robber bridegroom. He's wow. the yin to the robber bridegroom's yang. So, but like I said, big characters, lots of fun.
And this, when is this set in, this particular play?
So the original, the music was based off a novella, but it takes place in the late 18th century, so late 1700s.
Okay.
The way our show is directed, we start in a modern day family reunion, and we start sort of telling long tales, and we sort of morph into these famous characters from the past that we all know and have sung about many, many times.
Now, as you said, that basically there's no intermission.
There is actually an intermission. All right,
but there is no, you know, house goes dark and it's a change of scenery. That does not happen.
Not truly. No, the transitions are built into the show as little calls, square dances, little lines. So as sets get moved around, people are doing little jigs around it, moving it in
cleverly disguised.
Cleverly disguised. Right in front of your face. We hide it right where you can't see it. But there's no everyone's sort of there the whole time as part of the storytelling.
Wow. That's amazing. And what has it been like to rehearse it? I mean the first thing I was gonna talk about, you know, you mentioned about casting. I've seen a lot of local, how it's from stem to strand to where the casting call and the folks come in.
Sure.
But a lot of times, a lot of the local folks, a lot of the local theater companies usually draw on the wealth of folks here in the area. It sounds as though Americana Theater Company draws you around the country.
We do. We typically have a local casting call. This show in particular, we didn't have one only because it's so specific with the musical instruments, and the needs of the show were so just down to the wire of what we needed. And also, in a show like this, when you only have 2.5 weeks from beginning to lights up, it's hard to take a chance, you know. We have to kind of go with known quantities. So especially with musicians who can act and sing, it's a lot of talking to old professors, talking to old directors, saying, oh, do you know a guy who can do this, this, and this?
Sure.
100%. And he's like, yes, I do. And then give that guy a call and see if he wants
this
to come.
It's kind of word of mouth, per se.
Yeah, exactly. But we love hiring local as often as we can. We love getting any of the local actors on stage as much as we can.
Again, if you are just tuning in, we have Jesse Sullivan, artistic director for Americana Theater Company, and we're talking about The Robber Bridegroom.
I won't say bridegroom. I just don't know why. Described here as a southern down-home bluegrass fairy tale and a rollicking great time. That's amazing. Talk to me as far as if you're trying to be timely, if it's set in certain. Who do you have in to provide the costumes and the vision for this? Because I think that's part of it. When you go to a show, it all has to come together.
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of our company members and ensemble members in the show, Peyton Gobay, is our costume designer in this show. She is really delved into costume design in the last couple of years. She did a couple of movies up in Northern Mass. She's been doing costumes for us for a couple of years now. But she and the director get together pretty early on in the process. They talk about color palettes. They talk about what they want to see, especially on a show where we sort of transform from modern day to the past. Very specific costume pieces come on to sort of indicate, oh, that's who this person's going to be, and that's who that person's going to be. And then it might come flying off in the middle of a number because they got to jump up and do something else, you know. But costume pieces are very important in a show like this to sort of identify them when you're doing storyteller theater and everyone's on stage all the time.
Now, are you allowed to rehearse in the space, in the Spire space? You have to rehearse elsewhere, and then you'll be able to go in Tech Week and set your lights and do all that.
You are a theater guy. So we do.
I've had to live it.
We do rehearse in the Spire, unfortunately not on the stage. We have the space upstairs that we use for our studio, Studio Americana, where we do kids' classes, summer camps for our kids.
Oh, nice.
But we have the room up there, which is where we rehearse. We don't get into the space until July 1st, so about 6 days before we open.
Now, what kind of a challenge is that going to be? You've got the Independence Day holiday right there on Monday, and some folks might want to. You got to have a dedicated crew that's going to be like, all right, yeah, you know what? Show's going to be hitting the stage on the 7th. I'm going to be there.
Right. We typically have one or two union actors in the show. And part of the union deal is you have to have certain days off. And just the way it works, we'll end up shifting our day off to 4th of July. So they will have 4th of July off as part of their contract. But then, of course, normally we have Sundays off. Now they have to work on Sunday instead. So it's a little bit stressful a couple of days before the show, because it always happens that way. We're always there in July. It just depends on where that holiday falls. It actually is a little bit better for us when it falls on a Monday. Mm. It's tougher when it falls on a Thursday or Friday because you lose a show day, you know, because people typically want to be out with family and seeing the fireworks and all that kind of stuff. So this time actually works a little bit better for us.
So let's talk about as far as the dates when this is taking place. Is it Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights?
Yep.
And then you do the old
matinee
at
Sunday.
2 p.m. What do you like better? You like the nighttime performances? You like the matinees?
It's very funny. So the last couple of years, we've been, especially through COVID, through the way the world is, we've been leaning into some comedies, giving people a break from reality as opposed to some of the harder stuff, some of the more, you know, nitty-gritty stuff. Because of that, I've found that sometimes our Sunday matinees are our most rolling on the floor audiences. You know, it's been very hard to sort of pin down the algorithm of where people are going to land. But our Sunday shows have been pretty wild. So,
you mentioned COVID. Are you and your organization thankful that you were able to persevere throughout? What did the group do during COVID to just? Because I think you saw a lot of businesses that decided to, that's it, we're done. Theater is not necessarily a restaurant, but you have a group of people and a stream of consciousness and you're together, you know, and you're off the stage for a couple of years. Maybe folks there, you know, they want to go in different directions and maybe they might not want this. How did you keep the group at least to be focused and say, hey, we're going to come out of this on the other side eventually?
Yeah. A dedicated core, honestly. It's people who wouldn't let it die. The people who are on our board, the people who are on our company members that are just so dedicated. You have to be in a nonprofit. You know, you are truly in it for the love, especially with our company. And it was a hard couple of years, but we stuck through it. We have, prior to COVID, we were just about to start rehearsals for The Crucible. We were going to do it in in accordance with the 400 anniversary for Plymouth and all that stuff. It was going to be a whole big shebang. So that was a tough loss for us when we that fell apart. But you know, like we said, we made it out the other side, and we decided to hold off on the Crucible because, again, coming out of COVID, that was going to be a kind of a tough sell. I think people wanted to sit, and they think they just wanted to laugh, which they did. You know, they came out in droves to see Clue, which was very funny, and we hope we can repeat the process. People need a break this time around.
And you and I were talking off mic prior to popping on mic, and your company does right now, like you said, there's a summer show and then a Christmas show.
Yes.
Is there an appetite, hopefully, to do more? And what would you need to be able to do more?
Well, luckily, Derek Martin, the original artist director and a friend of many years for me, as of a month ago, is moving back to the East Coast. Because that's what it comes down to, is just boots on the ground. You need people here. And a lot of our staff was living bi-coastally. And so now that they're going to be here and working here and being around all the time, our goal is to become a true either 3 or 4 season theater.
Yeah, that definitely would be fantastic. And when would you... So is this show kicking off the season, or is it ending it?
This, for us, it kicks off the season. At the moment, we do not have a show in the spring. But the goal would be spring, summer, fall, winter. We do a summer show and a winter show. We would hope by next year we'd be able to put in a fall show, and then the next following year after that be able to do one every season.
If folks want to get tickets for the Robber Bridegroom, how much are tickets?
And yeah, absolutely. So it's $35 for adults, $30 for students and seniors. The shows are at 7 p.m., as you said, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. at the Spire Center for Performing Arts in Plymouth. You can go to our website at Americana Theater, theater spelled with R-E-T-H-E-A-T-R-E.org/tickets. You can also find us on Facebook, on Instagram. And if you just Google Americana Theater Plymouth, we're the first name that pops up.
Now, are these shows your way of raising money, or do you do fundraisers from time to time?
We do both. We do both. We're very, very lucky that we have a dedicated list of donors. People who come to the show tend to want to keep us around. So they've been very good about that. But of course, gate for us is also very important. So we need to sell tickets to make sure the lights stay on.
As far as group rates, are you doing group rates for tickets if folks wanted to? Because there are different societies, whether it's the Red Hat Society or a group who are down at Pine Hills.
Mm-hmm. We do offer the $30 option if you're coming in a group. And obviously, if there's anybody who has a larger group that they would like to speak to us about, please give us a call. We're always happy to talk to people about that.
Anything that we haven't touched upon to this point, but I give you an opportunity to make sure that we... Or even, you know what, if you want to kind of reprise what we discussed earlier on about the show itself?
Yeah, I would just like to really highlight the amount of talent in a show like this. Besides the piano player, actually my father, Bob Sullivan, is an avid guitarist, banjoist. He's going to be a banjo in the show.
Wow.
Jesse Winton, who is one of the named characters in the show, is playing guitar and mandolin. His family... he actually grew up in a traveling bluegrass band, so he's got a whole history of that. Angelica Vendetti out of Plymouth Violins Lessons. She's known all over the South Shore. She's playing first violin and fiddle. Rachel Womke is playing our second fiddle and also another named character in the show. And our percussionist is out of California, another guy who plays on stage. I won't say who he plays because it's kind of a fun reveal, but he plays a guy on stage who also does a lot of the washboarding, spoon playing, you know, sort of bluegrass percussion instruments that you expect in a band like that.
Now, have you had a chance to hear all of this? What is it like to hear all of this come together? And again, it's totally different when you're rehearsing it and then when you have an audience in front of you.
Absolutely. If you're on Facebook, we have a clip of our very first rehearsal. And it's amazing to watch these professionals get together and just very first try. Let's just see what happens when we all throw it together. And it happened. The band is that, they're that good. They're just so great.
Well, knowing that you are, a week and a half before hitting the stage, What is it like when you have different groups from? I know what it's like when you have a lot of local folks who come together and they know each other, and they kind of bond as a family for that particular show. Do you have that same feeling with this group?
Yeah, you know, I think in general what brings a lot of people back to theater, performing in it, being part of it, is the family that you make.
Yep.
You know, it's sort of trial by fire. You get in and it's always an impossible task, you know, and it's a mystery how it always comes together, and yet somehow it does. And same thing for these guys. They come from all over, and we also, as a company, we try to make sure we highlight moments where, you know, we'll get them all together for a cook-off. We'll get them all together. You know, tonight let's all go out to eat together. Because you need that time not working too to get to know people. It only makes your performances on stage better when you trust the person you're with.
Right.
So
bonding experience.
Exactly.
Most definitely. Again, if you are just tuning in, we are privileged to have Jesse Sullivan here giving us the details about the show that's coming up. Hits the stage July 7th. For a series of, I want to say the last show. 12 performances. The last performance on the 24th, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yep, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And again, just to remind you, performances, most of them are at 7 p.m. except for Sunday matinees that are at 2 p.m. It's also important to let you know that, in fact, this production is abiding by all state health safety guidelines that are put in place for performing arts venues. If you want to purchase tickets, The Robber Bridegroom, more information about Americana Theater Company, visit the website, Americana Theater, as he said, theatre.org. That's your way to be able to get tickets. It's actually /tickets right after that. Or you can call 508-591-0282. Again, this is going to be at the Spire Center for Performing Arts. It is handicap accessible, and there is paid parking available on the street side in any of the public lots. If you've haven't been into Plymouth in a while, there's plenty of parking. If you've never been to the Spire, it is a fantastic spot to see performances, especially when we're talking musical performances. The acoustics in that space are phenomenal. So if you're looking for something fun and exciting, and this definitely sounds very fun and exciting, I would implore you to step out and grab yourself some tickets, maybe grab a group of you, get together, and check it out. The Robber Bridegroom are going to be hitting the stage come the 7th of July. Jesse, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Please, thank you so much. We are so grateful for having us on.
And we're going to step aside. I swear, we got one more segment. Nicole Aslan is waiting in the wings. She's going to tell us about her new book, Concession Stand Crimes. Just a moment. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, my name is Alex Bazantin and I'm running for Plymouth County Commissioner. I am the former chairman of the Abington Conservation Commission, former Abington Water Commissioner, and now serving in my second term as Abington Selectman. I am currently serving on the executive board of the Plymouth County Advisory Board. If you would like to learn more about my candidacy, please visit my website at alexbazantin.org or follow me on Facebook. I am Alex Bazantin for Plymouth County Commissioner, and I approve this message.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's. Did y'all know people all over the world celebrate the 4th of July? Not because we fought and won our independence. It's our idea of freedom. Having somewhere you can practice whatever religion. Somewhere to work, play, and raise a family in peace. No matter what race, religion, or creed, we truly live in the best country on this speck of dust called Earth. I say idea because we clearly have work to do. We, the people of the United States of America. The 4th of July has always been my favorite holiday. I hope it's my kids' favorite as well.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, Hudson, New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Tiny of Tiny Sons Glass. If you're driving along right now and you've got an angry little ding in your windshield.
Ouch!
But good news. We can fix that ding. We'll fix that ding before it spreads. Drive on over to Tiny and Sons, Route 53 Pembroke. We will fix that ding. Your insurance company will pay.
And that's why I sing the gimme gimme that ding.
So give me that ding. Tiny and Sons Glass will fix that ding. Insurance company will pay.
That's right.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Give me that ding. That's nice.
Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Joining us is author Nicole Aslan. Nicole is here to talk with us about a second book that she has written. Some of you may remember that Madeline, that is a character that is in the book Murder at First Pitch, written by author Nicole Aslan. Nicole, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me again. This is so exciting.
Let's talk a little bit about the first book, just for folks who may or may not had a chance to purchase your first book, Murder at First Pitch. Give us the details about the first book.
Sure. So Murder at First Pitch was released in September of 2019, pre-pandemic, and it centers on a young woman named Madeline, no relation to my actual cat, Madeline. And it's set in Abington, which is where I live. There is no ballpark, but I made one up because who wouldn't want to pretend to run a baseball team? And of course, when she returns to work for her family, she stumbles across a dead body, as one does in a cozy mystery, and sort of inserts herself in the investigation to clear her family name. Her brother gets accused of the murder, so she gets involved. And that's kind of how she gets reintroduced to the world of the fake world of independent league baseball in Abington.
So tell us a little bit about your newest book, because I think in our previous conversation, you teased the idea that this might be a little bit of a book series. What is Concession Stand Crimes all about?
So Concession Stand Crimes, it was really fun. I continued Madeline's story. So we're still in Abington. We're still at the Armadillo's ballpark. And it just, much like Murder, She Wrote, there's another incident at the ballpark. Even though people still keep going there. And it centers around the heiress of a beer brewery fortune on the South Shore, completely made up again because there are a lot of breweries out here. But and she ends up getting murdered. And it's, again, Madeline kind of finds herself not so much inserting herself, but getting information comes through her. She's a little bit nosy, so she overhears a lot of discussions and she picks up on things. And she sort of assists the detective, you know, kind of like, hey, I heard this information. You might want to check this out. And it kind of just dovetails from there. And it was a little bit more fun to play around with the ballpark a little bit more. So there's a few more events. There's a few more Abington Easter eggs, like Martin's restaurant. And it was just really fun to keep Madeline's adventures, I guess to say, her murderous adventures going in the second book. So I'm excited for it to be out.
I could be wrong here, but it sounds to me as though being an author allows you to combine two things that you really like. A, I believe that you're probably a really big baseball fan.
Of course.
Okay. And it also feels like maybe you might be somebody who really likes murder mystery themed books.
Yeah, my parents, my dad's always been a big reader. We would spend summers in Connecticut with my grandparents, and at the time they only had the Yes Network, which is the Yankees channel. And my grandfather was like, "Nope, we're not watching that." So we would listen to all the Red Sox games on the radio in the summer, and that's still how I prefer to listen to my Red Sox games, is Joe Castiglione and Will Fleming. And so every night I fall asleep to the dulcet sounds of hopefully the Red Sox winning. And then my grandmother always had like a stack of used mystery novels on her like next to her chair. And so she would finish like three books a day. So I'd always just see her reading those mysteries. And I think mysteries are fun to write, because you can sort of, especially cozy mysteries, because you can make it feel real, but still have all these little fun, like, let's be honest, not all of us are going out and solving mysteries every day, but by writing it, you can kind of feel like you're an investigator and kind of all that stuff. So it's really fun to be able to play around with that. So I enjoyed that part of it. And also, if you get mad at somebody, you can, you know, put their name in the book. Names have been changed kind of thing, but you can use that as a little catharsis to get that out.
So this being your second book, was there any change in your process of storytelling this time around?
Yeah, it was a little bit. So I started the second book almost immediately after the first book was published in 2019, and then pandemic happened. So creativity kind of went down a little bit. I was working from home, so it was hard to go from working at my home work computer to coming to my writing computer to do the book. So I apologize. That's why it took so long to come out, because there's a pandemic. But I did find that my new, a better way to write is now I focus on small chapters instead of just writing stream of consciousness. I find it's a little bit easier to go, oh, I can write 500 words a day and not have to kind of put all that pressure on myself to get something completed, which is how I'm working on book three right now. I do have like a sort of outline for book three, but I'm not following it. So we're back to the regular, just a couple chapters, you know, a week, just to see how the flow is going.
A lot of writers that I have, you know, authors that I have had a privilege to speak with over the years, some of them encourage this thing called writer's block. Did you ever have to overcome such a hurdle? And what's your process to break through to continue writing?
Yeah. Writer's block is real. I don't trust anybody who says it isn't. Although some people are just really good at writing and they don't get that little, I mean, we all have a little bit of self-doubt and we start writing. We're like, this doesn't work. What am I going to do? Or how am I we call it the messy middle or the muddled middle, because you get a really good idea of what your beginning is. We get a really good idea of what the end is. And then you have to expand on it for 70,000 words. And you're like, oh, how am I going to do that? So I definitely get it. And I definitely got it during the pandemic when my creativity was a little bit lower, because there was just so much going on. But I found that if I just take a day, a lot of times I go outside and I write on my deck because it's away from all the distractions. And you can kind of get it. And then I read a lot of books when I start to get blocked a little bit, read a couple of mysteries to see kind of how their flow goes. One of the great things about writing a baseball mystery is now that baseball's back full time, I kind of have a lot of inspiration from teams across the country. I follow a lot of independent league, minor league, futures league teams on Twitter and Instagram. So if I start to feel like I'm missing something, I can steal from their creativity. Like the Savannah Bananas is who I steal a lot from. They're a team down in Georgia, and they're kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. So they do all, you know, stupid stuff. Like they do TikTok dances in between. They announce themselves as they come up to bat. So I kind of try to pepper things like that into the book, kind of to jazz it up a little bit.
I've actually seen a Savannah Bananas video. There was one where the pitcher's getting ready to pitch, and the fielders behind them are dancing along with the pitcher before he throws
it. Fire dances. It's just fun. And it's kind of how I watched a story about them on SportsCenter, and it was just a guy who the team was for sale, and he's like, I want to own a baseball team. And now he shows up to every game in a big yellow suit, and they have a great time. So it's pretty cool. And this year I'm actually doing a couple, I'm doing a road show with the book and going to a couple baseball games. So I'm going up to Nashua for July 4th to the Silver Knights. And I'm going down south Pennsylvania to the Harrisburg Senators game, which is where I grew up down in Mechanicsburg. So it's going to be fun to actually bring the book to baseball this time, instead of just trying to corral people and be like, are you a baseball fan? Are you a baseball fan? Come see me. I'm going to go to where the fans are and hopefully have them enjoy my book as well.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Nicole Aslan. She is the author of a new book called Concession Stand Crimes. And we're learning all about the book and her writing process. It's interesting. You mentioned about independent baseball, knowing that you're a baseball fan. I'm not sure as to what era, but in the local area, the Brockton area, you get the Brockton Rocks.
Yep.
And are you going to do anything at the Campanelli Stadium, that there are a lot of second generation baseball players?
I mean, D'Angelo Ortiz is there, Manny's son, I think Keith Folk's son. Like, whoa. Gosh, I remember watching Red Sox games when David Ortiz's son was like 5, and now he's like a real baseball player. Like, oh my God. I actually sent them an email last week, so I'm hoping to see if I can work with them, you know, in the next couple of weeks to do something. Because, yeah, you're right. It is literally 10 minutes from Abington, maybe. And I drive by it all the time, and I'm constantly in Brockton. There's a very good Starbucks there, so...
Now, did you have to do any kind of research just to make sure that there's authenticity to any direction your book has got, any direction that your book went in?
I did not a ton, because I did want to make it kind of a wish fulfillment. If I owned a team, this is what I would do kind of thing. When I first started writing the first in the book, Murder at First Pitch, I did read a book called The Only Rule Is It Has to Work. And it was a book about two dudes who just decided to buy a baseball team, like a minor league independent with old washed up players. I think Jose Canseco played with them once, like when he was 45, like stuff like that. And they kind of ran through all the stats of how they made the team successful, how they made money, how they didn't make money. And one of the things I found that I think I put it in the first book, I can't remember. It's been so long. Is that they would, if you caught a foul ball or if you caught a home run ball, if you brought it to the concession stand, they'd give you $5 because they were in desperate need of balls. They couldn't afford to lose those balls. So you'd get a free hot dog or you get $5 back. And I just thought that was, it's so fascinating the ways that these teams, because it is such a competitive market for your eyeballs and for your entertainment. Like, you know, people want to go to movies, people want to go to the pool, and they may necessarily want to sit for 9 innings in the hot sun. So I think it's really fascinating to see how these community ballparks like Brockton, like the one in Nashua, kind of keep bringing people in and provide family entertainment for, I mean, let's be real. I mean, I went to a Red Sox game on Mother's Day, and I probably spent $100 between tickets, parking, And then, of course, you got to get a hot dog. And then, of course, you got to get a souvenir. And so I think to provide that family of four, family of however many, the opportunity, that to me really is the draw of these smaller clubs. And you get to see the stars of the future, like the Cape League. You know, you get players that are going to be in the big leagues in 1 or 2 years, and it's free. You know, like, it's amazing. That's why I hope the sport can keep. I do talk a lot about that in book 2, about how the sport, you know, there's, you got to keep reinventing yourself because you got to keep competing with all the stuff that's out there.
It's interesting that you say that, because when they built Campanelli Stadium and brought in, you know, they're part of the Can-Am League, the Canadian American League that is now defunct. I think prior to the pandemic, they went belly up. They no longer ceased to operate. But, you know, this, if you do research independent baseball, the shelf life can be anywhere from 8 to 10 years, which means, you're right, you have to be highly creative to keep the folks coming back and having, you know, Star Wars night, different little nuances to draw people to the ballpark. So are you saying that you might have little nuggets like that somewhere as Easter eggs?
Yeah, in book 2, Madeline's first big event that she's planning at the park to try to turn the tides and make sure people keep coming is an 80s night. So I know a lot of teams have done 80s nights where they change up the uniform, they give out like slap bracelets, a lot of day glow. I also I think, you know, the Mix 104.1, Carson and Kennedy, I'm a big fan. And so I put them in the book 2 as kind of the MCs and kind of just like stuff like that, just to keep it fun. And also so that people, like, I'm going to a craft fair later and it's in the town that the book is in. So it's nice to be able to say, like, hey, you know, if you have something that you love about this town, I'll put it in there, because it is great to be able to throw some shine on these South Shore towns that a lot of, you know, Boston mysteries are set in Boston or on the Cape or on the North Shore. I don't know very many that are really South Shore focused. And hey, we got a lot of personality down here, so you got to write some books about it, you know?
Sure, exactly. And that's how I think how you gain interest, especially locally, is just putting in little things that are, you know, maybe Wareham is known for something, or maybe Cohasset is known for something, and it somehow is in the book. Let's talk about characters. We know that Madeline is kind of the anchor pin, the anchor to the book itself. Who are some of the other individuals or characters who are built around Madeline in this story?
So she, of course, is very close to her family. The parents still are involved with the team. They're slowly trying to retire. So, you know, they thought the son was going to be able to take over because, you know, firstborn sons, all that good stuff. But he's kind of choosing a different direction. So they're like, Madeline, we want you to keep it going. So they're involved. One of my favorite characters, I know I'm not supposed to play favorites with my children, but is Eliza. She's the receptionist / best friend / sounding board. She's always been one of my favorite characters because she's very much based on a lot of the people on the South Shore that my best friend's from Pembroke. A coworker was from Pembroke. And it's just kind of that whole, she's just fun to write because she's kind of brassy and kind of just takes no guff, which all my South Shore friends just take nothing. Don't worry, they'll tell you what they think. And then there's Davis, who is the security guard or the head security person of the team, because you always have to have a cute security guard. And he's kind of the love interest / straight man for Madeline's crazy adventures and thoughts. One interesting thing is when I wrote the first book, I held a contest at one of my first events to name a character if they bought a book, and somebody did, and it's an actual Abington resident, and so I got to put her in the book as well. Her family grew up in Abington. She was in Abington for like 50 years, so she's kind of like this grandmotherly character that I'm really excited to introduce and hopefully get to bring out in more books, and just super fun that way.
I will tell you, the one thing that I'm a big fan of is the cover art for your books. Great cover art for your first book, Murder at First Pitch. And the second one is even more clever. Talk to us about the concept behind the cover art.
I cede all credit to Don Kramer at Panda Moon Publishing. He has a really good questionnaire. Like a questionnaire that he asks before you write the book. Like, hey, what would you like? What would you not like? What colors are you looking for? You know, all this kind of stuff. And so when we, I think I'm looking at concession stand crimes right now from across the room. And I'm like, I think this was, we had a couple of discussions about it because we wanted to make sure people knew there was beer in it. And obviously we want to keep the logo of the concession, of the baseball, because that's kind of the logo of the book now. And he, I hate saying this, he hit it out of the park, no pun intended. And he's just been amazing to work with as a cover artist. Like, I can't even imagine the graphic work that goes into it. So usually it's within one or two covers that he sends me that I'm like, that's it. Perfect. Done. See you later. And, you know, we don't have to go back and forth a ton of times, which is really nice and exciting.
Yeah. Just again, you know, you get the pulled focus on the first one with the baseball. That's kind of looks as though it's really battered. Yeah. Then if you look at the, like you mentioned beer, but then if you look at the baseball, it looks like a little smattering of blood on the baseball. I mean, just, these are all little hidden things if you, you really pay attention. It's, and again, I love the font.
I was going to say the font is probably my favorite because it does evoke like a program or a baseball team font, you know, and it's just like I said, he's been, the whole team at Panda Moon's been great to work with. So I really lucked out. And it's because she's a big Red Sox fan is that I'm with them. She found me on Twitter, Zara Kramer. And she's like, I'm a big Red Sox fan in Texas. And I love your book because I love baseball. I've been coaching for years and all this stuff. And so I think it's one of those, I know a lot of writers out there are like, oh, it's so hard to get a publisher. It's so hard to get an agent, but you just have to find that right person who connects with your book, who kind of understands what you're doing. I was rejected 100 times before I got my publisher. So I feel like there is somebody out there. It's very much the same rules apply to dating as it does to getting an agent or a publisher. There's someone out there for you. It's just right place, right time, right connection. And I lucked out with Panda Moon as my connection. I think it's been awesome to work with them.
It sounds to me as though your patience, your perseverance has paid off in finding the publisher and the right partner to be able to publish these books moving forward.
And also being a part of organizations like Sisters in Crime and Mystery Writers of America, I joined them before I even had the germ of an idea for a book. And even just being around all these other prolific mystery writers and cozy mystery writers, just stealing, taking some of that knowledge, absorbing some of their knowledge really helped me focus. And it helps me now too, because as an independent author, you have to do a lot of your own publicity. You have to get yourself out there. You have to go sell at craft fairs or baseball fields, or you have to contact independent bookstores and say, hey, I'd love to put my book in your store. So I think by having that kind of group, you don't feel so alone, which is nice.
If you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Nicole Aslan. She is the author of the first book she put out, The Murder at First Pitch. And now we're giving you details about her latest book, Concession Stand Crimes. You have just right around the corner, talking is almost like it's a perfect segue. You actually have a launch party that's going to be planned for July 15th. Give us the details.
It's actually July 16th. It's a Saturday, 12 to 4. Yep, 12 to 4 at the Study Hall 101 in Kingston, at the Kingston Collection. It's a new library-themed restaurant bar thing. There'll be cake. And there'll be snacks, and there'll be books, and there'll be me. The book is actually, you can actually order the paperback on Amazon right now before the release date and get it early. But the official release date, if you pre-order the Kindle, is Wednesday, the 29th of June. But you can order I've already ordered the paperback for myself and my mom. So we get the early access. But yeah, so it's going to be a launch party where I'll have both book one, Murder at First Pitch, and book two. And you'll get to meet me. You'll get to meet my family, which some of them are, you know, referenced in the book in characters. You'll see some personalities. And yeah, it'd be really great to see people come out and A, check out this really cool new bar, and B, buy some books.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you've done a series of author talks. What was it like for the first book, and are you excited about planning author talks for the new book?
So excited. I have been a library fanatic for my entire life. I go to the library at least once a week, even though I have a shit ton of books, a crap ton, a lot of books to read still. One of my first events was an author talk with the Abington Public Library in October of 2019. And then, of course, everything shut down. So it became a Zoom author talk, which still is equally as fun because I, you know, only have to wear clothes from the waist up and put on makeup for like 6 hours and not have to worry about it. This year, I'm actually working with the library again to do an author talk, hopefully this fall, as part of their with the Abington Library. And if you are a library director or member, just, you know, hit me up on my website. I love to talk, and I will talk about anything. It doesn't even have to be my book. It could be mysteries. If you are a library, we also, with Sisters in Crime, we have a speakers bureau where you can bring in multiple mystery authors at a time. And we have a really cool event called Mystery Making, and which is basically Whose Line It Is It Anyway, but for murder mysteries, we make up a mystery on the spot. So go to the sinc.org website and you can find that there, or come to my website, NicoleAslanWriter.com, and I'll come talk to anybody.
So it's worth noting, being an avid reader, for those who are out there who are tuned in, what are you reading now?
Oh, so many things. I probably have about 3 Kindle books going. I'm reading a fantasy novel called City of Dusk by Tara Sim. I belong to a website called NetGalley, which is where you get advanced readers' copies of mysteries. So I'm reading the latest, it's Jennifer Ashley is the author, and it's like the Bow Lane Mysteries, where she's a cook and she solves mysteries on the side. There's another series of books. It's called A Trace of Poison. Her first book was Murder at Malwyn Hall. And so a little bit of everything, let's put it that way. The Ninth House by Leah Verdugo is another one on my list. You know, I really would love to just read all day, but got to pay the bills. So, and got to pay for those books is really what it is if they're not library books. So
if there was a question that I haven't asked you as an author, but you feel that you want to share a little nugget, whether it's about the book or yourself, with our audience, what would you say?
I would just say, if you know, especially to writers, don't try to write what you think people want. You have to write what you want. And like I said, the reason I wrote these 2 books, and hopefully the third shortly, is I love baseball. I love mysteries. I didn't have a ton in the cozy world. There's, you know, Robert Parker writes baseball mysteries, but that's a little bit harder edged than mine. There's also a series from the 80s by a former sports writer, a woman sports writer who wrote a couple of mysteries, but nothing in the Hallmark murder mystery genre now. So I just decided to write what I wanted. And like I said, that's how I got my publisher, which was just, she's like, I love baseball. And I've met so many women and readers who are like, this is what I've been wanting, something that kind of focuses on both of my interests. So write what you want. And like, all it takes is one person to read your book, and that's it. And you'd be good to go.
Again, we've been speaking with Nicole Aslan, author of her new book, Concession Stand Crimes. Again, don't forget, Study Hall 101, Kingston Collection, July 16th, and books now available on Amazon. Is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
And your website as we close out our conversation?
NicoleAslanWriter.com. NicoleAslanWriter.com.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This is so fun. It's good to see you.
And again, you have been tuned into Monday Night Talk, and that's all the show we have. Until next time, have yourself a great day.